Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
Adios, homegrown. Welcome, Sunday morning wake-up call, listeners. It's a beautiful Sunday morning. Spring is in the air. If only the pollen would go away. But I guess that's part of life. Sneezing and cleaning the car. Is that part of the future, too, Dr. Matt Haas? Cleaning the pollen off my car, sneezing it out of the air.
Are we on the air right now?
Yes, we are.
Oh, that's an interesting segue.
That's part of Sunday morning wake-up call.
I like it, Rick. Yeah, pollen is in your future, I would say.
It's certainly been in my past.
And all the things that go with it. And I really appreciate you inviting us here today to talk a little bit about something really is in the future, and it's something we're working on currently in Virginia and very, very locally with Albemarle County Schools, and that's a restructuring of our high school experience for the entering class in particular of 2018.
And this comes straight from Richmond.
Well, it comes from Richmond. It certainly is the impetus. However, if you look back a little beyond that, there have been some recent changes at the federal level when it comes to education and accountability. The famous No Child Left Behind Act that was instituted in 2001 was reauthorized recently to become the Every Student Succeeds Act. And with that change, there's been a de-emphasis on standardized testing. Students like Meg, who's here today from Western Albemarle, during her career in public education, she's taken 34 standards of learning assessments. I don't know if you counted them, but that's how many. There's going to be a drastic reduction in the amount of standardized testing and a greater emphasis on experiential learning and assessment for students. With that change in Richmond at the Virginia Department of Education and the state legislature, they've looked at changes around how we can structure our high schools to create a greater emphasis on workplace skills, career development, and community outreach or community engagement. And so we're starting to see that now at the local level as we make those plans. This fits well with the philosophy of Albemarle County Schools. We do believe in project-based learning. We think that that's the best way for students to get engaged and to apply what they've learned. So, yes, there is an impetus from Richmond, but it's something we embrace, and we're looking forward to the changes.
So our guest today, Dr. Matt Haas, telling us all about... We're getting started on what's going to be the high school of the future. Some of the, we will get a little more in depth on what's being called the five C's, correct?
Yes, sir.
So Matt Haas, the Albemarle County Deputy Superintendent, he also touched on one of our guests today, Meg Ritchie. Meg is a Western Albemarle County High School senior. Good morning. Welcome, Meg.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
A lot closer to that microphone.
Sorry about that.
Don't be shy. Lessen that aura. So, good morning, Meg.
Good morning.
Racing back from Richmond.
Yes, sir.
We also have with us Jim Hart from the Kiwanis Club. Also... a lot of the leadership programs for our local high school students.
That's right. You may not have heard of Kiwanis, but you've probably heard of Key Club.
And Key Club.
So Kiwanis is the organization that's been in Charlottesville since 1922, and we sponsor four Key Clubs in this area at Charlottesville High School, at Western Albemarle High School, where Meg is a student, and at Albemarle High School, and at Monticello High School. And we're very proud of the accomplishments of the students in those service leadership programs. That's what they're called.
And we're glad to have those opportunities for our students. And so we'll be talking to these three guests today about how the county and the school division will be making these things happen, about how they'll be seen and how the businesses those things will be the importance of how these will be seen from the businesses and from the students' eyes. So if you have a question you want to know more about it from your end, from listeners' end, you're welcome to call up 434-284-9470. But give us a few minutes to talk a little bit about it. Dr. Haas, talk about the five C's. Exactly what are the five C's? That's what people have heard. Mm-hmm. The parents have heard about it in the paper. But I want to know what are the five C's and a little bit of explanation about it.
So I think, Rick, the five C's are what we would traditionally call soft skills, and usually they've been on more the periphery of learning for students. That what they are is creativity, critical thinking, collaboration, communication, and then the fifth one is citizenship or civic engagement. Those are all important workplace and college skills. However, for the most part, we have very content laden curriculum experience for students in our high schools. They go to a series of classes. They accumulate content knowledge on which they're tested. And over time, they build a transcript of content. In the background, you have experiences that some students have and some students do not have to some degree that build and emphasize these five areas that help students be successful in the workplace.
But now the goal is to help with the business skills, correct?
Correct.
I mean, that's what I'm hearing.
We're not. I think one of the concerns that people might have is that we're going to de-emphasize the academics or the content knowledge. Well, what we're really going to do is try to just grow the other areas so that they have the same significance of academics. Because, as you know, the academic background is important, but to be successful in the workplace, you've got to be a strong communicator, and we need to emphasize communication skills when students take a course or when they're doing their projects. They've got to be good at working with other people to see a project through to fruition, to be successful working in today's environment. You've got to be able to get along and collaborate. And it's very important for students to develop, as they make their way through school, a sense of civic responsibility or citizenship. I would certainly posit that we're becoming an increasingly global community, and seeing yourself as part of that and someone who contributes is very important in life.
Now, my reading shows that this is the applied knowledge and skills competency. Is that correct? Is that what it's called?
Right now, I think that's what the one piece of the high school experience that Virginia Department of Education is looking to emphasize for the entering class of 2018 for when they graduate in 2022 is that I'm sure our listeners and you are very familiar with the high school transcript. And that's that document that says you've taken all the requirements you need to graduate and go on to the next level. What VDOE is looking to do is to build into that transcript a guaranteed experience that every student would have where they take what they've learned and they apply it through an internship, a work-based learning experience. It could be a community-based project like the ones you're going to hear about today. But then it would be, certified, for want of a better word, that the student has done that successfully, and that will be a graduation requirement for those students. So that's the part that you're talking about.
So did I hear that it is required or will be required for graduation?
That's what we're hearing right now from Virginia Department of Education. The changes that would be proposed and then enacted with that entering class. We still don't have every bit of information or all the regulations in place, but that's where I think we're headed.
Now, Meg, let me ask you, Meg Ritchie, who's a Western Albemarle High School County senior, has this been discussed in any way at the student level?
Yeah.
This is what we're talking about is for the 2022 graduating class, correct, for everybody here? So it's for the 2018 freshmen, and you're getting ready to graduate now at 2017.
Unfortunately, I'm going to be graduating next year, so Albemarle County has to hold on to me for 1 year. You aren't getting rid of me that easily.
Too bad. So, I know you're ready to go to college now, aren't you?
Well, I mean, I've enjoyed a lot of the stuff that I've been able to do in high school, a lot of the opportunities, and so it's a mixed bag. I'm excited for what college has to bring, but there's also a lot of changes that are happening right now, especially with this mindset of working towards project-based learning and this incorporation of what students really want to do. So from the student level, as you were asking about, a lot of times you hear that classic student question, when am I ever going to use this? And it's something where students will be in class and they're like, I don't even like this. Why am I in this class? And so when the students aren't motivated and they don't appreciate what they're learning or they don't enjoy what they're learning, then they don't have that intrinsic motivation. There's the extrinsic motivation to perform and get the grades, but they aren't internally motivated to really delve into the learning. So it's more of a, let me just memorize this for the test that's next week. And not actually internalize it. And so when it is something that students can be really passionate about, and it is this more project-based learning, or if they're doing an internship, realistically it's going to be something that they are interested in, something that they really want to look into, something that they want to study. Maybe there's a career that they want to follow, and so they're getting to see sort of what that career is like, what they might be doing in that job. It's something that they're going to be feeling very strongly about, very passionate about. And so they're going to be a lot more motivated to go and be excited about what they're doing. And obviously everybody has days where they're like, I just don't want to get out of bed, just want to lay here. But overall, it is going to increase the motivation that students will show. And I really feel like it will cut down on the number of times that students sit there and go, when am I ever going to use this? How is this going to help me in life?
It's Meg Ritchie, who's a Western Albemarle High School junior.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Who also we'll get into in a little bit. Meg, recent Grand Champion Regional Science Fair winner, getting ready to compete in the international competition. So we'll get into that in a little bit, too. Let's give her props where they need to go. We also have Jim Hart here, a leadership programs for high school students. Now, Mr. Hart, who wouldn't want to have Meg Ritchie as an intern or working with the business if that's right? The thought process on what you need to learn or your view on the program. So if that's one of the students and the view on the five C's and the requirements, great. Is that your view on how the majority of the students out there will think about things? Do you think that all of them will have that thought process and their view on the requirement?
Well, absolutely. It's wonderful to have Meg here as an example of the students that are coming through our system and through the school system. And it reflects, it produces that pride that we all as adults feel when our students are excelling. You mentioned the generational aspects of this, that she's working here. She's a junior, but looking forward toward the future. The Kiwanis program with the Service Leadership Program develops a structure for students to become involved in these activities of service learning, experiential learning, starting in the elementary schools and moving through the different grade levels from K-Kids in the elementary school through Builders Club at middle school to the Key Clubs in high school, and then at the college level, it's called Circle K or CKI. What you see is students meeting students like Meg, communicating with them, developing teamwork and collaboration, and helping one another progress in the development of a successful project and outreach into the community. Yes, it's an exciting prospect to have this application of their learning to the real world, so to speak, developed over time, and the students are encouraged to follow the direction and inspiration from mentors, not only their teachers, but other students who are involved in these service leadership programs at higher levels.
Sunday morning wake-up call here on 94.7 WPVC, talking with Matt Haas, Jim Hart, Meg Ritchie about the high school of the future, beginning with the 2018 class. But really, you've already started. Is that correct? You have seventh graders, and you've already started giving them some classes to take or some programs to get into. Is that correct?
That's when I was talking earlier, I think that we're a good landing place for projects like these, because through the vision of our school board and Dr. Moran, we're always pushing toward innovation. In the middle school level, one of the things we brought on board last year is a computer program called Naviance. It's a curriculum, but it's also a college and career planning tool. So we've started using that this year with middle school students and also high school students for their college application process. That tool in particular will help form the backbone for college and career planning for our students. They can go in as early as sixth grade, and sixth grade teachers will have students take assessments that will help them see what their strengths are, and then also give them ideas about careers that they might pursue and the kind of coursework and experiences they might want to have at the secondary level so that they can be ready to take things on. You make a good point, Rick. You know, when you ask the question, are students ready for something like this? You know, you have students that are at the tip of the iceberg doing very heavy, very, very esoteric work, like the kind of work that Meg has done. And then you have students that come to school and say, hey, what's in this for me? They basically show up and say, what's there for me? And I think that our job as educators is to try to engage students at all levels where they are, help them see what their passion is, and then you go from there. Right now, we expect students to get on board with a somewhat detached curriculum. And I have to take my hat off to all of our educators, to all of our teachers, our bus drivers, building level principals, all those folks, because they're doing hard work to make the connection for students between the curriculum and students' everyday lives. What we're trying to do is make a shift, and it's not a huge shift, just big enough, I think, to make a difference so that there's a better connection for students between what they're learning and what they think is important to them.
Am I hearing that the students are having an opportunity to design part of their education? Mm-hmm. And by that I mean more than choose between Spanish and French or, you know, that sort of design in their education?
That's the ultimate goal, is that, so on one level, a student would, as they do now to some extent, would not just look at what the typical set of classes they take to graduate and just choose from among them and then take a couple of electives just to get through it. We're looking to shift to what are you interested in pursuing as a career, and then line up the kind of coursework that you're going to take. One of the pieces we're going to build on for that entering class is going to be called a freshman seminar. And we're developing the curriculum for that now. And the first year experience for students will be to find your passion, find out what's interesting to you, get to know yourself better. And every student will have a mentorship experience in a seminar class where the sole goal of that class is to think about the future, think about your strengths, and think about what you want to pursue in high school. As the students make their way through into their junior and senior year, we're developing what we're calling a project pool. It's very similar to a project for anybody that wants to look it up. It's called Iowa Big, B-I-G. If you go to that webpage, it goes into depth in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. There's a high school program there where there's no school. Students identify projects that businesses offer, community organizations, civic organizations. They're all there, and then the student develops their curriculum around solving problems and doing projects in the community. That's what we would like to develop for our juniors and seniors here in Albemarle County, that if I develop a passion in medicine or a particular problem that I want to solve, I go on and I look in the project pool to see what's out there for me to work on that's been offered maybe by UVA Hospital or Martha Jefferson, a real-life problem that I can tackle. I go in, I select that project, I work with my mentor and perhaps some other students, I do the project, it's authentic and real world, and then I meet my graduation requirement as well.
Fascinating. Iowa Big. And you know, that leads me to want to talk to Meg Ritchie, our Western junior, about her science fair project. I need to take our break. When we come back, that's what we're going to do. Sunday morning wake-up call, 94.7 WPVC, 11:22. Let's take our break. We'll be right back. All right, back in action here. We have Meg Ritchie with us. She is a Western Albemarle junior who won, recent grand champion. I feel like I should bow down. Recent grand champion, regional science fair winner, and off in May to the international competition. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
I'd like to learn more about your project. Please tell us?
So one thing that we've really been talking about is identifying an issue in your community or identifying something around you that you want to address. And unfortunately, my project had a sorrowful inspiration to it. So freshman year, my bus driver actually passed away. And you don't think about bus drivers being somebody who's super influential, but this is who the students see every morning and every afternoon. It's the same face. And there's a really big difference between a bus driver being like, get on the bus, don't talk, don't eat, versus somebody who's engaging the students. And Mr. Morris was the latter. He would always ask us about what was going on, if we had tests, if we had games, how we thought we did on an assignment, if we wanted to talk about it. And he really made sure that he spoke to all the students, understood what made them tick, what made them go, and what would make them feel better if they were down. And he was just a phenomenal bus driver, a phenomenal person. And unfortunately, he had a process happen that occurs with many diabetic patients. So he developed a diabetic foot ulcer, which is essentially an open wound, often an open wound, on the bottom part of a patient's foot. And so this is very common, especially with diabetics with peripheral neuropathy. And peripheral neuropathy is basically damage to the nerves, so you lose a lot of the feeling. And so if somebody without any peripheral neuropathy or diabetes is walking along and they feel something rubbing in their shoe, they're like, hey, this hurts. I'm going to change shoes. I'm going to put a Band-Aid on it. I'm going to stop walking. I'm going to do something, because pain is your body's way of saying, hey, stop. Don't do that. This is messing up your body. But if you can't feel that pain, it continues. And so for a patient with peripheral neuropathy with other nerve damage, if there is a peak plantar pressure spot or a concentration of pressure on the bottom of the foot, this continues to rub and rub and rub. You end up with this open wound, and it's in a warm, moist environment in the foot, so you end up with a lot of bacteria growth. And so for patients with poor circulation, as diabetics often have, there isn't a lot of blood that's going down the white blood cells to really treat this infection. So you end up with a terrible situation. Oftentimes, this leads to amputation, and 8% of diabetic patients die within 3 years of ulceration, and that number is raised to 50% if there is an amputation. So it's a very staggering number, especially considering the rising number of diabetic patients, especially in the United States. It's something that's very severe, and you don't often think about it. Most of the time when you hear diabetes, you think of insulin or managing your sugars, but you don't really think about these other effects that can happen in association with the diabetes. And so essentially what's happening now in order to combat this ulceration process is that patients are told to check their feet, and they're given a standard diabetic orthotic. So in the standard diabetic orthotic, you want a maximum surface area because pressure is force divided by surface area. So the larger the denominator you have in the surface area, then the least amount of pressure you have in any one spot. And so the materials used in this diabetic orthotic are actually designed to basically mold the patient's foot. So you end up with this increased surface area, and it's supposed to mitigate any peak pressure. However, the main way to make sure that this is correct or if it's working is if the patient is actively checking, which, let's be honest, everybody procrastinates on things. Everybody says, oh, I'll be fine. And so a lot of patients aren't as diligent in their checking as they should be. And also sometimes it starts internally, so you don't often see the outer effects at the very beginning. So unfortunately, the main way that patients discover that they've developed an ulcer is that they actually notice discoloration in their socks from the leakage from the ulcer, which is very, very gory and not something that's enjoyable for anybody. And so essentially, the idea behind my project is that if you can make sure that the diabetic orthotic is effectively mitigating this peak plantar pressure and spreading out any concentrations of pressure, then you won't go through this ulceration process. So from a technology standpoint, it's actually very simple in design, which was one of my intentions with it, because you want something that's very simple so that it can be recreated, and especially so that insurance companies are incentivized to cover it. So essentially what it is it's a series of pressure sensors that are connected to an Arduino. And the Arduino writes to an onboard micro SD card. And so it takes the pressure data and writes onto there. And it can actually detect, even though they were very cheap sensors, very cheap Arduino, all found online, the sensors were about $8. Very, very simple technology. They can actually detect these differences in pressure. I essentially recreated what a dropped metatarsal head, metatarsals being the balls of your feet. So a dropped metatarsal head, which would be a peak plantar pressure point for a lot of patients, or if you had begun this ulceration process, what that would look like. I was able to recreate that for my testing, and it could actively and effectively pick up these differences in pressure. And so this changes the game, because between $9 and $13 billion are spent every year just on caring for diabetic foot ulcers. This isn't the rest of diabetes, and this isn't even other types of ulcers. It is just these diabetic foot ulcers. And so there's a lot of money, $9 to $13 billion, that is going towards this terrible process. And so in addition to this monetary cost associated with it, you have the loss of lives, you have the loss of time, you have family members who have emotional burdens on them, you have the actual patient themselves who have to deal with this crushing loss. And it's just a situation where nobody wins. And so the idea is that with this device that can actively pick up these differences in pressure, you can track the peak plantar pressure, and prior to the ulceration process beginning, the doctor can effectively see, okay, this is where an ulcer would form because there's an increase of pressure in this spot. So it's in life, you don't often get a lot of things where everybody wins. But this truly is something where everybody wins from it, because the insurance companies are incentivized to cover it, since the preventative medicine is a lot cheaper than the costs that are associated with caring for it on the back end. And they're already covering the standard diabetic orthotic. And so it's basically the same technology with a slight addition, since with the not with my current design, but with the plans I have it for, have for it in the future, it can be internalized completely within the device. So the patient themselves wouldn't actually see that much of a difference in their care. One thing that they would be able to hopefully use, not right now, but plans for the future again, is that they would be able to track the data on their phone, having it communicate through Bluetooth. And so they'd be able to actively see, and they could get a notification like, hey, this spot on your foot is receiving more pressure. You should go see your doctor. And just in case the patient is like, oh, I'll deal with it later, the doctor can also get that notification and call up the patient and say, hey, I really think you should schedule an appointment. How about I see you at this time? And so you, insurance companies are incentivized to cover it. The patient gets much better care and is actually doesn't have to worry about this process happening quite as much. And so everybody wins from it.
I don't think Meg needs a mentor.
No, Meg, I want Meg to be my mentor.
Yeah, I was going to say. Well, now I understand how you got a grand champion title.
Thank you so much.
That's amazing. Great job.
Thank you, sir.
And yes. I think the insurance company should be send cheerleaders to be behind you at the international competition. That's wonderful. Great
Thank
work.
Thank you, sir.
Well, and Wake Up Call is behind you at the international competition.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Now, Jim Hart, you know, by the way, this is the Sunday morning Wake Up Call. We are talking about high school of the future and some of the new requirements for the class of 2022, the high school, the freshman class of 2018. Matt Haas here with us. He's the Albemarle County Deputy Superintendent. We just heard Meg Ritchie talking with us. She's a Western Albemarle junior. Jim Hart here with us. He's a businessman providing his perspective from the Kiwanis Club. He also the Key Club at several of the high schools. I did some rough math. There are the majority, or I guess all of the high school kids will need internships at some point in their time, correct? If you add Charlottesville and Albemarle together, Charlottesville K through 12, you got 4,200. Albemarle K through 12, you got 13,200. So that means K through, if I just divide them in half, you get 8,700 K through 12. That's a lot of kids that need mentoring and have to have some kind of internship or effectively a job.
Well, we're really proud. Kiwanis is really proud of the students like Meg, who's not a member of the Key Club, but she is like many of the students that come through the Key Club in the area and in the inspiration that she provides for us. She's unique. Let me say, yes, her development is out of this
unique
world. That's right. But we do want to talk about numbers. Roughly 300 or 400 students are involved in Key Club right now. 200 at Albemarle High School.
I was in the Key Club at my high school.
Is that right?
That was a long time ago.
That's right.
Different place. And I'm sure that they may not. They may have redacted my name out of their
probably
out of the
100
yearbook.
Western Albemarle has about 100. Charlottesville, smaller club, but Monticello has another strong club. And every month they're filing reports of the activities and projects that they're involved in, and they're calculating the volunteer hours that they do and the money that they raise for agencies and organizations in the area. And the numbers that come through are very staggering. When you do the math, as you say, you find the impact that these students have in this community is really outstanding. So if you can take you know, for example, you know, what seem to be small projects and just add them and exponentiate them through the community. Looking at Western Albemarle, they were involved in a project at school, a DI fundraiser project, volunteers providing food and drinks and services for the people involved in that Destination Imagination project.
But that's sort of my question: is that what qualifies as meeting the qualification?
Right, okay.
Are we asking you and the county and the kids and the students to get a job for 10 hours a week to work at SPCA,
Loaves and Fishes Food Pantry?
Or are we asking a business to bring them in and work them without paying them? Or do the businesses and the individuals need to be, are we asking folks, are we taking advantage of anybody?
That's a great question, Rick. This is the proposal from the Virginia School Board, and I think what you're going to see is there's lots of entry points. So there, what they call it is work-based experiences, internships, independent studies, student projects, civic engagement, and other experiences designed to demonstrate applied knowledge and learning. So what that really means is that as you enter high school as a ninth grader, you've had some experiences that might tell you what some areas of passion are for you, what you're interested in doing. And then the student develops a plan for a work-based or community-based learning experience that would be right for them. For some students, it might mean doing an internship at maybe a radio station. Maybe they might spend...
Bring them on,
that's right. They might spend the summer at the radio station working and learning in that environment and also helping to make the radio station better. They might work on a very specific project that they're very passionate about. Maybe it has something to do with parks and recreation where they're designing and building a mountain bike course or something like that. It really, the key is to make it interesting for the student. Last year, we recorded over 2,000 internship experiences that our students either got on their own through independent study or they did it outside of school, and we asked them to report about it. The real issue for us, I think, as a school division, is to make sure that there's equity in programming, that there are students, because they've got more resources, can pursue a project that they feel passionate about. And then there are students who maybe don't have the same level of resources that we're going to need to provide greater support to. I don't think we're going to have trouble finding all the different ways that students can do these experiences. I think the part that we're going to have to work hard is to make sure that every student gets the experience that's right for them.
And I'd like to add to that we also need to work hard to make sure every one of those projects, small or large, has some element, a very important element of those five C's that you were talking about.
That's right.
I look at the service leadership programs as providing opportunities for students to develop higher order thinking skills, critical thinking skills, plus the opportunity to work with collaboration with their other students, to communicate with one another, to organize the project, to be accountable for the project. Citizenship, outreach into the community, thinking globally but acting locally, all of these things. So if you have a group of volunteers working at Discovery Museum, for example, it's not just babysitting what they're doing, which is important and great, and high-quality babysitting is extremely important and essential for us, but it's a high quality of child care, and students are given an opportunity to have experiences in something that they might want to go into.
Well, child care is not always collaboration if it's one-on-one.
Absolutely, that's right.
But working with Jim Hart may meet all these qualifications, while working with Rick Moore may not. There's mm-hmm. different levels of the person that you're working with. And so one of my questions is, who in the Albemarle County School Division is checking on the person that is providing the mentoring?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a key point. Yes.
Yeah, and Jim, you really, I mean, you just nailed all the things that what we're talking about. That was a brilliant, I think, response. And I think Meg's situation certainly illustrates the incorporation of the five C's into the work. There's still work to be done around infrastructure to do the internship experience. There are boilerplate MOUs, you know, memorandum of understanding that we'll need to draft. There are legal considerations around students entering a workplace. So we'll have to address all those things. And the key person in this work is always going to be the teacher, the educator. Whether it's one of our career counselors at the high school level or one of our classroom teachers, we'll need to make sure that everyone has specialized training to be a mentor so that they can help supervise and work with students in these experiences.
11:41 here on the Sunday Morning Wake Up Calls. We talk about some of the requirements that have been added to the high school for the class of 2022, this freshman 2018, happening soon. If you've got freshmen going in 2018, so that's everybody below that.
Right. Seventh graders.
Yeah. We'll be right back. Back on a beautiful Sunday here on the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. That's how we got our name. High Schools of the Future, Meg Ritchie, Jim Hart, Matt Haas. Meg, your comment on that last little bit we were talking about?
Yes, sir. So one of the things that you were talking about was how do you make sure that the students are really meeting the requirements? And that's something that's super tricky because there's always the legal aspects of situations. And you also want to make sure that it's still engaging for the students. You don't want to get too caught up in really checking off boxes, which mm-hmm. a lot of times is what education is now. Mm-hmm. And so especially with this, I feel like a really important way to look at it is that situations are always going to be different. If you're interning at a radio station versus interning at a medical office, they're going to be two very different internships. And that's really the goal. You want it to be specific for the student. You want it to be what they are truly interested in. So I think a really good way to look at it is what does the student get out of it? If you can actively see in the students' responses and how they're being engaged that they are meeting certain requirements, then it doesn't really matter that the internships look very different. That's something that you really want to see. You want that variety because that's really what education doesn't have now. Mm-hmm. It's all very cut and dry. Going through, a lot of my friends have gone through the application process for colleges, and it's coming up for me, and it's everybody's taken math, everybody's taken history, everybody's taken the science. So how do you stand out? How can you really tell the college that you're different? And so a lot of times internships are a way to do that. It's to say, this is what I'm really focused on. This is what I really want to do. And so this is just the county's way and the state's way of allowing the students to have more time during the school day to really do what they're passionate about and to really express themselves in that way. So if you can actively engage the students and then really make sure that the requirements are being met by looking at their responses and looking at how they're being engaged. So maybe talking with students on the back end and saying, okay, what did you learn from this internship? How can you use that for the future? What was inspiring to you? What troubled you? What do you want to talk about further? In those responses and that engagement, not only are you getting the back end discussion of the internship in those situations that the students were in, then you also are able to see the requirements in that sense. So that way you don't get very cut and dry internships. You're still able to have that diversity.
Meg, I'll start with you on this question, and then Jim and Dr. Haas, feel free to answer from here, which is, are the colleges ready for this? Are the colleges ready to receive the applications that have this diversity on the answer? Meg, you talk about how everyone currently or certainly previous to this has received an application with the cut and dried checkbox on it as what you've been doing. And now going forward, you're going to be able to talk about on your application, this is what I've done with my diversity, and I went to intern in the medical field, and I had an intern at the radio station. And if everybody from the 8,700 current 7th through seniors in Albemarle County sends out 8,700 different applications to the college field, and that goes across the state of Virginia, are the colleges ready to receive applications that way?
I think colleges are more than ready, because a big part of college is that you're finally independent. You aren't with your parents anymore. You're making a lot of your own decisions. Up until now, you've, a lot of times for classes, you've sat down with your counselor and your parent. You've discussed it. You've gone down the checklist. It's basically mapped out for you. But college is the place where you get to live more on your own. You're making your own decisions. You're choosing your classes more. And you have a lot more options. And so it's something where you're going from a very cut and dry environment to freedom. And right now, there's not really a parallel. And so by having this freedom more in high school to choose what you're going to do, I feel like it's more accurate for the universities. They're trying to look at a piece of paper and understand who they're either accepting or denying. And I feel like the best way to really understand how you would do in college is to see how you spent your time in high school. And that's the idea, but it really doesn't parallel. And so by doing this, I feel like the universities are actually getting a better understanding of who you are. And I feel like they would appreciate that. They want students who are going to work with their facilities, work with their professors, work with the resources that they're providing, and really go out and flourish. So by seeing how you utilize resources in your high school, I feel like that's a very accurate representation of what you might do. And it really shows who you are and what you aspire to be and what your goals are.
I would echo those remarks, too, from the employer's standpoint, too. I think one of the things that individuals want to do is make themselves stand out, as you would in applying for a college position, stand out from the others, and for an employer to stand out. And so if you're involved in an internship or a project through one of these programs, you're going to be identifying what you're passionate about, what you're interested in. As Meg just exudes this passion and interest and concern, you know she's going to be good at whatever it is that she's interning in, because she is passionate about it. She's identified her interest in who she is and how she stands out from the rest. And the employer is looking for somebody who can come in and be enthusiastic about that position, and friendly at the same time. Also, the employer is looking for somebody who's going to be able to be willing and able to follow directions. No matter what internship you're in and how bright or passionate you are, you're still going to be in a position where you need to follow directions from someone. So are you willing and able, and have you demonstrated not only your ability, but your willingness to follow directions? And finally, are you faithful? Can you stick to a project? Can you see it through to the end, or are you giving it up? You can demonstrate that in these internship programs or experiential learning or however applied skills work. You can demonstrate that to an employer. And the employer, I think, would set your file aside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dr. Haas, what's happening at the teacher level? Are the teachers being asked to, is there any retraining? How are you getting the teachers to sort of understand what's going on with the five C's and the and the retraining of what's going on with the 7th graders now and the 2022 graduates?
Yeah, that's a great question. First of all, I just want to say that Meg and Jim both rounded out. I noticed how you emphasized college, and you emphasized college and then segued into employment, because these kinds of skills and these experiences are beneficial for both areas. It's not an either or, it's more of an and.
That's the point of the 2022
exactly.
and the High School of the Future piece, correct?
Yeah, it's really about, I mean, if you look at it from the Virginia government perspective, it's really about having a competitive economy in Virginia. With the loss of federal jobs through sequestration, Virginia sort of staggered a little bit around in terms of economy. And I think the response is to look to the school divisions, the K-12 public education, to write that. And that's what we're doing. I do think one of the things that is always a struggle when you work on a new program is communication and getting people on board when they've really got their day job that they're trying to do. You know, it's hard. It is difficult to always engage teachers around change because they're very focused on the students they're working with. Having said that, when we started doing this work back in August, we did not just do it in a vacuum with a handful of people in the central office. We engaged the high school principals. We asked them to interview and find teachers from their schools to work at a central committee to start to develop what our high school program guide would be moving forward in 2018. And so we had a group of teachers, students, administrators that worked for several months in the fall to develop this program guide that took this new emphasis into account when they proposed it to the board in February. Each one of those teams, that team had satellite teams at the four high schools, so that there was a communication conduit back and forth around the work we were doing, then also getting input from students and staff. So it may not be perfect the way we're rolling this out, but we always try to get as many voices to the table as we can get so that people understand. As we prepare to do the first big thing, which will be the freshman seminar class, we will be, over the next couple of months, recruiting teachers who are interested in doing that, providing professional development for them, and developing the curriculum. Even though we're not going to start it next year, we will be starting it the following year, and we want to be ready. The other interesting thing is the interest from teachers around developing interdisciplinary courses. That's another tenet of High School 2022, is not to just have isolated courses like world history and English, but to figure out ways to combine those courses so that students have a context for their learning. And that's happening rather organically right now at the high school level, at all the high schools. So there is some teacher engagement around that work as well. But I think, teachers, a long time ago, I was a high school teacher. I went in because I did have an interest in my content area, but my primary interest was young people, was working with students, helping them find their passion, helping them see the connection between that and the real world, and then giving them what they needed to get there. And I think that teachers will very much embrace these changes because it will give them the opportunity to do that kind of work to a greater extent.
Again, our guest today, Dr. Matt Haas, Albemarle County Deputy Superintendent. We have Jim Hart here, works with various leadership programs with the high school students. And Meg Ritchie, she's a Western Albemarle High School junior, recent grand champion of regional science fair winner, and off to the international competition in May. You'll be able to listen to the podcast on later today. Now, Matt, one of the things when I got the promotional information, there's a lot of information on there about how this research shows and works in teams and college success. And the information that comes to me about that always pops up about people who don't fall into that guidelines, always the kids on the edges and things like that. And with this being a requirement, it makes me wonder about what do you do about people who can be successful, but they don't work well in teams, that they're more of solo people. They don't want to go to college. They're not part of the research averages. Is there a way to graduate without this state competency?
And thank goodness for those people, because those are the people that I think always drive us to take a second look at these big kind of factory models that we've had for a long time. You know, high school's been high school the way it is right now probably for more than a century, around Carnegie units, accumulating credits. Students come in and it's sort of going through an assembly line, and we add the parts until they're ready to, we think they're ready to graduate. And for many that works, but for many that's disengaging. We need to do, as Megan said earlier, this isn't about creating a cookie cutter that, you know, just another cookie cutter that every student goes in and gets stamped and then they can graduate. We want to allow students to show that they've learned what they've learned in a way that matches what their strengths are. So there has been a lot of changes, even just at the state level, around seat time, clock hours, those kinds of things that are leading toward the kind of differentiation that you're talking about, Rick. So it's not about saying you fit the mold or you don't fit the mold. It's how does every student have the right experience for them to lead toward workplace skills and college readiness.
Jim, I want to ask you, when we talk about, and we touched on this a little bit earlier, about how all these kids need to have some sort of mentorship, need to have some sort of connection in the job world. When I was talking about the show throughout the week, somebody asked me, are these kids going to take away low-paying jobs, minimum wage jobs?
Take it away from someone?
Yeah. Are businesses going to be able to offer minimum paid, or not even pay $7.25 an hour jobs, but bring these kids in for 5 to 10 hours a week and take somebody's hours away?
Well, I don't see the businesses looking for a
because I want to run a restaurant. Come work for me in my kitchen and wash dishes for 10 hours a week. Start there, bus tables, and I won't pay you because I'm going to learn, because I'm going to start you there. And by the way, I don't need you, young man, or you, sir, who I used to pay minimum wage, and you can be gone.
Well, you know, so I'll help Jim out on this one, but you know, as a high school kid, I washed dishes, I did all that stuff, and I expected to get paid for it. I wouldn't do that through a school-based learning experience. Mm-hmm. And we're not here to structure experiences for students so that they can go in and do that kind of work without getting compensated. I think our students do make up, you know, just so happens teenagers do make up a large part of the workforce here. I have a 17-year-old son who works for a business, and he gets paid. What we're looking for are for projects that students can get engaged in, workplaces where they can go in and learn through the five C's, not learn just by doing work for.
So
no
those
pay.
Jobs will be paid. It's not everything. All these mentorships and internships are not necessarily free.
Well, they may be free, but it's not about getting cheap labor for businesses. It's about our students have a lot more to offer than just sweat equity.
Real quick, Meg. Yep.
And I think a big thing to look at is if you can identify the project within what the students are doing. So if the students are just sitting there washing dishes, there's no real project in that.
Yeah.
There's no conclusion to it.
All right.
And also with that, if the businesses are giving the time and resources to really train the students in the skills that are associated with that, then that's not at no cost to the businesses. They are putting in the effort and the time for the students. And so I feel like that is, in a sense, a sort of compensation for the students.
All right. I got to finish up. I love that. I love the answers there. I can help here in any way and get Jeff Leonard to help for whatever needs to be done going on in the future. Matt Haas, Albemarle County Deputy Superintendent. Jim Hart with the Leadership Programs for the High School Students, past president of the Kiwanis Club and the Key Clubs. Meg Ritchie, Western Omaha High School Junior, recent grand champion of science, regional science fair, and off to the international competition in May. Best of luck, 94.7 WPVC and Sunday Morning Wake Up Call.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake Up Call, only on WPVC LP Charlottesville.